If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. On Sunday in South Bend, Indiana, President Obama delivered the commencement address at the University of Notre Dame. It was partly like any graduation day.
First of all, congratulations, class of 2009.
It was partly tuned to pre-graduation fury over Notre Dame honors and the pro-choice president.
I also want to thank you for the honorary degree that I received. I know it has not been without controversy. I don't know if you're aware of this, but these honorary degrees are apparently pretty hard to come by. So far, I'm only one for two as president.
President Obama called for calm dialogue on abortion. The Notre Dame crowd went both ways. Here, scattered hecklers are booed down in South Bend.
And since this is Notre Dame, I mean, that's all right.
Stop killing the children from the rafters. A big boo against the heckler from the crowd. This hour on Point, Barack Obama at Notre Dame in hot days over the nation's leading Catholic university, the president, and abortion. Joining me now from South Bend, Indiana, is Scott Appleby, professor of history and director at the Kroc Institute for Peace at the University of Notre Dame. He was at commencement yesterday as the president spoke and the crowd responded. Scott Appleby, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks, Tom.
With us from Washington is E.J. Dionne, columnist for The Washington Post and senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, a practicing Roman Catholic. His latest book is Sold Out, Reclaiming Faith and Politics After the Religious Right. E.J., great to have you back as well.
And good to be with you again, Tom.
And with us from Washington, Helen Alvarez, professor of law at George Mason University. She is a nationally recognized Catholic critic of abortion and has worked as an attorney for the U.S. Council of Catholic Bishops. In 2008, Pope Benedict named her to the Pontifical Council for the Laity. Helen Alvarez, welcome. Very good to have you.
Thank you so much.
Scott, first to you. You were there in the great big arena where the president spoke to the gathered thousands of Notre Dame. Paint a picture of it for us, will you? What was it like?
Well, there was some nervousness going in, as you might imagine, among those of us who supported the invitation, but worried a little bit about how the event would unfold. And from our perspective, I have to say it couldn't have been a more beautiful ceremony and a more rousing speech, set of speeches, especially by Notre Dame President John Jenkins, which I thought was one of the most eloquent of the speeches. But the President of the United States also spoke very directly, very honestly, acknowledged that on this issue there are irreconcilable differences, but nonetheless tried to find common ground and to reach out to people with whom he disagrees, including the Notre Dame faculty and administration. But the apart from the hecklers, the ceremony went off without a hitch, and there was, of course, incredible enthusiasm among everyone in the stadium, in the auditorium, for the president, especially the graduating class, who clearly resonate with him. The charisma, of course, is legendary, and he brought a full dose of it.
We'll talk about the protests and the president's remarks. Here is the president of Notre Dame, John L. Jenkins, with a little bit of his introduction of Barack Obama, sort of launching the theme that Obama picked up.
The world today is torn by division and fixed on its differences. Differences must be acknowledged, in some cases even cherished. But too often, differences lead to pride in self and contempt for others until two sides, taking opposing views of the same difference, demonize each other.
Demonization there from the president of Notre Dame. Of course, there are and were very deep feelings about Obama coming to this venue. Give us the kind of blow-by-blow on protest and, I don't know what you call it, counter-protest or what went on. I mean, we heard the hecklers in the rafters and elsewhere. We saw the pictures in the newspaper of some of the graduates with, on top of their mortarboard, the cross and two sort of baby feet indicating pro-life positions and maybe anti-Obama. We also saw a lot of mortarboards with the Obama O and campaign symbol on them. What was the actual back and forth in the arena in the lead-up and during the speech, Scott?
In the arena itself, there were hecklers who interrupted the president on three or four occasions. As you indicated in your intro piece, the students started chanting, "We are ND, we are Notre Dame," to drown out the hecklers after a while. And the president was not bothered by it, and he handled it fairly well. But there was no doubt that those hecklers got their message across, at least in that way. And, of course, outside the arena, there was a mass going on campus and protests of various kinds on and off campus. Folks have been bussed in from Chicago and elsewhere around the country who disagree with the invitation to the president and are strongly pro-life. So it was a full range on the campus itself. But in the arena, I would say that the large majority of the event was without interruption and went, as I say, rather smoothly.
Though powerful protests in the weeks leading up to President Obama's appearance. Here's a little bit, and we'll hear much more from President Obama at Notre Dame. But here he is raising the issue, saying, look, there are tough issues out there. He comes around here to how the country will deal with abortion.
The question then is, how do we work through these conflicts? Is it possible for us to join hands in common effort as citizens of a vibrant and varied democracy? How do we engage in vigorous debate? How does each of us remain firm in our principles and fight for what we consider right without, as Father John said, demonizing those with just as strongly held convictions on the other side? And of course, nowhere do these questions come up more powerfully than on the issue of abortion.
President Obama yesterday at commencement at Notre Dame, where he did receive the controversial honorary degree. Helen Alvarez, you've been watching all this in the weeks leading up to, and I'm sure you've listened to as much as you've been able to of the president's and perhaps read the whole thing, speech yesterday. Did it change your mind at all? You thought Notre Dame should not be doing this. Was your mind changed at all by the president's actual message?
The message was almost exactly what I expected. So, as you can imagine, it didn't really change my mind. The position that I and many others took, mm-hmm. I don't know, the ultimate petition that went to Notre Dame had 360,000 some signatures. Mm-hmm. And I think there were 70 some bishops in the end that spoke against it and
out
so
of
forth.
200 or 300.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I guess the position we took had several parts to it. And as you'll see, was not really altered at all by what the president said, which was exactly what we expected. First, that Notre Dame ought not to be actually giving honor to a president with a position on abortion, as I'll describe it, you know, briefly in a moment, that they chose to be part of a national party. And believe me, there's so many of us that would love to be part of a party celebrating our first African-American president. It's very hard for us, very hard to see this party going on and to say we cannot be with it because his fundamental understanding of human rights is so deeply flawed that for him, being human is not enough to merit respect, to merit a right not to be killed. So the fact that Notre Dame actually decided to give an honor was our first problem. Second, the idea that put forward by Father Jenkins and richly mined, as expected, by President Obama was that this would be a dialogue. And this is really a cynical tack to take. First of all, an honorary degree is the exact moment when no dialogue is possible. And Obama's discussion of dialogue allows him to present himself as a lover of dialogue. And in fact, he really seems to see dialogue and debate in a good fashion as the goal itself, as the end point. He has no intention of changing his position on abortion. He showed the way he does, quote, dialogue in his embryonic stem cell research executive order. It's to call your opponents by very nice names, convicted and intelligent and responsible, then never to engage their actual substantive argument, and then to say that you're wonderful, you yourself, for being willing to call them nice names and allow them to
speak. But I disagree, and your policy is done.
And I will never, ever engage the actual substantive merits of it. So to talk about dialogue and present yourself as someone who does dialogue in a context when no dialogue is possible, it's simply impossible.
Helen, hold the thought there, if you would. We've got the perspective. I want to get a word from EJ before our first break coming up here. EJ, you hear Scott Appleby, who was there, saw it. You know how to have heard the president. You hear Helen's unresolved significant problems with the president on this front. How did you hear it? How do you look at the whole fury, EJ?
Well, first of all, in keeping with the president's call for open hearts and open minds, I'm glad to be on this show with two very good people, and that's true. I disagree with Helen's view here for a couple of reasons. One is that the notion that a Catholic university cannot have someone like Obama because of his position on abortion when, in fact, as you heard in the speech, he went out of his way to say we can find common ground in reducing the number of abortions. And I thought it was very significant that he not only said reduce unintended pregnancies, that's contraception, which everyone's for, let's make adoption more available, that's good. He also said let's provide care and support for women who do carry their children to term. And if we want to reduce the number of abortions in the United States, that's absolutely essential. The Catholic universities have honored all sorts of people who have disagreed with the church on important issues related to life, notably the death penalty. And I think there was something terribly partisan and political about the opposition to this degree. And I think President Obama trumped them yesterday.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about President Obama at Notre Dame and the fresh uproar over politics. Here's a little more of the president yesterday on having an open mind and open heart on this subject.
Understand, class of 2009, I do not suggest that the debate surrounding abortion can or should go away. Because no matter how much we may want to fudge it, indeed, while we know that the views of most Americans on the subject are complex and even contradictory, the fact is that some level, the views of the two camps are irreconcilable. Each side will continue to make its case to the public with passion and conviction. But surely we can do so without reducing those with differing views to caricature. Open hearts, open minds, fair-minded words. It's a way of life that has always been the Notre Dame tradition.
President Obama at commencement yesterday at Notre Dame. Outside the arena, there were some 100, 200, maybe more protesters. Here's one Catholic priest, John Raphael, a Notre Dame graduate, responding to the call for dialogue.
If, as we have been told, a dialogue is actually taking place over there, that dialogue must be shaped by truth and charity and protecting the sanctity of all human life, as the church understands life, must be its goal.
The debate has been hot for weeks. E.J. Dionne, Scott Appleby, and Helen Alvara are with us. I want to get some listeners in here right away, and then we'll come to you three on where this goes. Stephen in Savannah, Georgia, you're on the air, Stephen.
Hey, Tom, thank you for receiving my call. Mm-hmm. Listen, I think that Notre Dame sold out. I think it's obvious from when Obama came on board with his stem cell enactment and allowing that to have freedom. I think there's really no dialogue that is open to his part. I think Helen's absolutely right that, he's made his stance, he's firm in it, and for Notre Dame to bring him on board, I think they sold out.
What do you say to the president when he says we may have irreconcilable positions here, but let's at least talk civilly to one another? Do you go for that or not, Stephen?
Well, you know, we're talking about a human life, and we're talking about allowing that life to to service and be born, or to be destructive and kill it in its simple state. And, you know, I guess it depends on what each individual's personal stance is, if they view life as worthy or not. Obviously, Obama does not, and he's allowed, continues to allow the stem cells to go on and the abortions he fully supports. So I think Notre Dame sold out, and I think for a president to take the honorary degree, knowing that it is a hot button for the nation, and to come to Notre Dame to do that, I think there's a lack of scruples there.
Stephen, thanks for your call. Let's get one from Milton, Massachusetts. And Fred, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
As a father of five, as a graduate of a Jesuit university, a teacher, public school teacher of some 39 years experience, I am just appalled to think that a Catholic university would even consider not giving an award, a degree to the President of the United States. I hear all this business about irreconcilable differences. In my education, my Jesuit education, those irreconcilable differences were matters of faith. And I may or may not have a faith, but I could not impose my faith on my neighbors. And my neighbors in my neighborhood have disagreements, different points of view from mine on abortion. It has been resolved. The Supreme Court of the United States has spoken. The issue of when life begins is hardly resolved scientifically. And for the Catholic Church to continue to insist on an article of faith and trying to impose that article of faith in the political arena, I just find it's just very, very troubling to me. Luckily, I have a wonderful wife, three wonderful daughters. The thought of me imposing my, or that the church would impose on their bodies, decisions that, you know, supposedly are articles of faith, I think are terrible.
Fred, we've got it, and I thank you for your call. Of course, that what you call a political arena is also the world where the church works. Scott Appleby, you're right there in the middle of all this. I mean, these are not easily resolved things. The president is a very calming speaker. But what about the point made by our caller that, look, you can't talk this away? I mean, Fred is completely in agreement with Notre Dame and having President Obama there. But you heard Stephen earlier saying these are matters of life and death. It's not just something you can have a calm conversation about and, you know, be done with.
These are matters of life and death, and what we're trying to do is save lives. And the way you save lives in the political arena is to do what you can to transform the political culture. It's true that in an ideal setting, dialogue would mean that both parties are open to radical change, and Helen may well be right. In fact, I'm sure she is. President Obama is not going to become pro-life. We know that. That's a realistic judgment. So what we've done, and indeed we did initiate or deepen dialogue, why? I disagree with Helen's analysis of the speech. Not only did EJ point out some very important shifts in language, but there was another very important statement the president made. Let's have a good conscience clause. We respect freedom of conscience. And he pledged in the speech to refrain from what had been threatened, namely to remove the conscience clause from those who want to opt out of abortion in Catholic and other hospitals that have moral problems with it. So, right. We're not seeking perfection. The great can be the enemy of the good, but we're engaging politically because we want to save lives. Standing outside the arena with signs is not going to save anyone's life in this political climate. So if you really do care about reducing abortions and saving lives, you have to engage with the president and administration who, as is correctly said, has been a very strong, troublingly strong, pro-choice president.
I want to hear the president on that point. E.J. Helen will come to you. But here he is. He's spoken at this point about open hearts, open minds, using fair-minded words. It may not be enough to satisfy, but here he is reaching out with the particulars for the audience at Notre Dame.
So let us work together to reduce the number of women seeking abortions. Let's reduce unintended pregnancies. Let's make adoption more available. Let's provide care and support for women who do carry their children to term. Let's honor the conscience of those who disagree with abortion and draft a sensible conscience clause and make sure that all of our health care policies are grounded not only in sound science, but also in clear ethics, as well as respect for the equality of women. Those are things we can do.
The president speaking there about a number of things, including a conscience clause, which, as I understand it, would let medical professionals not be involved in abortion if they found it against their personal conscience. But, E.J., earlier you raised the kind of framing of this as a political body of protest as opposed to a religious body of protest. Elaborate, please.
Well, I think that the Catholic Church is not a narrow sect. The Catholic Church is not a political party. And so in its teaching, in the Church's teaching, social justice is intimately linked to the right to life. And the church teaches that there is a preferential option for the poor. If you're going to cut the abortion rate, if you're going to reduce or someday eliminate abortions, you're going to have to do that, I think, by pursuing a path of social justice where women are respected, have more more options. I wanted to say a couple of very quick things here. One, this is the first time, I think, that Obama really spoke as a fluent – he spoke fluent Catholic. This is the most Catholic speech he has given. His language on social justice was very clear. He corrected some of the mistakes he's made in the last couple of months. Scott mentioned the conscience clause. They were never going to require doctors or nurses who had a moral objection to abortion to perform them. But he finally made that clear. His stem cell speech, his original stem cell speech, I think, was not sufficiently respectful to the opponents of stem cell research. This time he spoke of their admirable conviction about the sacredness of life. He also was very shrewd in his choice of Catholic heroes, Father Hesburgh, of course, at Notre Dame, but also Cardinal Bernadin, who spoke about the seamless garment and said that protection for the unborn was rooted in a much broader agenda that included opposition to the death penalty, support for social justice, and a reluctance to go to war. So this was a real, I think, advance for Obama in his dialogue with Catholics. And as Scott said, I think by engaging this issue in a constructive way, the debate has moved. I think that a lot of liberals and Democrats are talking now about reducing the number of abortions in a way that they did not 5 or 10 years ago.
Helen, how do you look at this in the whole? I mean, you and others have pointed out that on many fronts, Obama has an agenda that lines up fairly well with the social conscience agenda of the Catholic Church. And yet here's this one and quite significant outlier in the president's view of the world. I mean, it is the world. We do have to balance things. And here's a president who won a very strong support from Catholics in the general election last fall. So how do you put these on a scale? How does that work?
Right. Several points here. He has, I agree with EJ, he used a lot of the language that Catholics like to use about the social justice agenda. So he had a good writer on that to look at that for him. He used Hesburgh, but in a context where Hesburgh, the former president of Notre Dame, was actually brokering a dialogue between people on both sides of the civil rights debate, which is exactly what was not going on yesterday, where he was calling for dialogue but not participating.
But
in
how
it.
Could he from used, from a podium with a,
well,
how many thousand
exactly.
people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly the point. He knew it couldn't, but he talked as if he was always open to it. He misused Cardinal Bernadin. I worked with Cardinal Bernadin for years at the beginning of my pro-life career. Cardinal Bernadin said, please do not use my consistent ethic as a way of setting the abortion issue aside. People use it that way. Your feet ought to be held to the fire on a fundamental question of humans' right not to be killed, and I deplore the misuse of it. So, with regard to the positive stuff, though, let's look at that. Obama did sing from the Catholic song sheet. In fact, what the pro-life Catholic and the secular pro-life movement is doing about reducing unintended pregnancies, making adoption more available, which is tricky. As soon as abortion became legal, adoption availability has shot down and never recovered. It is the pro-life community that does what he's asking, providing care and support for women who carry their child to term. The pro-choice community has never really been involved in that. So far, he's honoring what we've we've already done. With regard to conscience clause, he left himself a whole lot of wiggle room about where he's actually going to go with that. He referred to a sensible conscience clause. And in fact, there already was a conscience clause in federal law protecting us. It's his opening it up for comment and suggesting that it's not going to cover all it covered before that got us all in a flurry. The final point I guess I would make is the pro-life movement, whether you've got a Catholic or an atheist, whether it's Feminists for Life or the Pro-Life Alliance of Gays and Lesbians, none of us base our viewpoint on anything having to do with our faith, frankly. It reinforces it, but our fundamental documents are textbooks on embryology and genetics. Even the Vatican documents say we've never based this on when a soul begins or any teaching from Scripture or Revelation, although they too do abhor abortion. We've based our teaching on the medical documents about when a new human life begins. So to suggest that it's an article of faith is silly. It's just silly. It's an old debate. It's closed.
But Helen, if it's silly, I agree with you that right-to-lifers have a right to these beliefs and have a right to intervene in the political sphere and base these beliefs on a sense of who the human being is that is not necessarily based on faith. On the other hand, right-to-lifers go out and say that because the Catholic Church teaches what it teaches, therefore Notre Dame cannot have Barack Obama on that campus. So it strikes me as a kind of double language when it's convenient right-to-lifers, and justifiably so, want to argue that they base this on something outside of faith, and yet when it's convenient, they say, wait, this is an article
There's
of faith.
I need to say right here, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Helen?
There is a distinction here. When I testified in front of Congress for a decade, the argument was, you know, the medical argument, human rights ought to be respected. These are humans. It's the question of Notre Dame honoring. You referred to Notre Dame. You said it's not good to say they cannot have the president. I would be happy for Notre Dame to have had the president speak in sort of a town hall forum. Very happy. I think that would be terrific for him to be confronted with Catholic intellectuals.
Although many
there.
Catholic universities say if you're pro-choice, you can't come.
But that's not the argument on the table today, which is not whether they could have him, but whether they should honor him. And there now you have the Catholic thing joined with what Obama stands for.
But are you saying, Helen,
Catholic university ought not to?
Are you rejecting the president's call for dialogue around this? You're kind of snorting at it, saying he made it from a podium where dialogue, you know, on a day that's specifically framed so that dialogue is impossible because he's up there alone speaking and everyone else is listening. But are you rejecting it, you know, out of hand beyond that arena at Notre Dame yesterday?
Absolutely not. It would be delightful if he would engage it further. You can't help us for being a little suspicious, Tom, because his past, I mean, if Notre Dame had sort of been part of the Catholic community and it had consulted people who had been deeply involved with Obama on this issue over many years, they would have seen how he treated Catholic calls for dialogue on this, how the Catholic Archdiocese of Chicago was treated before his committee with his comments when he vetoed a Born Alive Infants Protection Bill. So
may I jump in here?
It's a history
Scott
that troubles
Notre Dame?
Us.
Yes, Scott, we've got half a minute before the break.
Just a quick thing on the dialogue can't take place at commencement. I disagree. First of all, if you listen to all the speeches there, John Noonan spoke about conscience and life. Jenkins gave a very ringing endorsement of the Catholic position. Obama spoke. What are we doing now? Mm-hmm. What has been in the media for the last month and will continue to be? If this isn't dialogue that was generated by the Notre Dame controversy, I don't know what is.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about President Barack Obama at Notre Dame's commencement yesterday and looking at the uproar, the dialogue over politics, the Catholic university in this country. I want to talk, Scott Appleby, about the Catholic university in particular in this issue. And the president of Notre Dame, Father John Jenkins, spoke on this yesterday. Let's listen.
As we serve the church, we can persuade believers by appeal to both faith and reason. As we serve our country, we will be motivated by faith, but we cannot appeal only to faith. We must also engage in a dialogue that appeals to reason that all can accept.
Scott Appleby, has Notre Dame as a major university, the leading Catholic university in this country, which means it has a religious mission, also a secular academic mission, I guess, or at least an academic mission, has it been put in a hard spot by this controversy? Does it go to the university's mission for good or ill?
The reason I'm on this faculty and many of my Catholic colleagues is that we believe in the Notre Dame Project, by which I mean to be fully Catholic and fully a national, in fact, international research university ranked very highly as we are. It's a delicate balance. It's difficult to honor both of those names, Catholic and university. But Catholic does mean universal, and the university is a place that honors a variety of views respectfully, but the Catholic in the University of Notre Dame means that there's absolutely no doubt where the university itself stands on questions like the protection of unborn life and a variety of life-related and other deeply moral issues. There is no ambiguity, and if anyone's paid any attention to this controversy, no one would think that Father Jenkins or anyone at Notre Dame speaking for the university moves one iota away from the Orthodox teaching on this. The question is, how does a university serve the church? And a university serves the church in a different way than the bishop or the pastor or the minister. The university has to engage a variety of scholarly approaches, a variety of ideas. It doesn't mean capitulate to them, but it means participate in reasoned discourse backed by research and scholarship, and try to transform the culture by graduating students who bring faith and values and a moral compass to the debates in this nation, and that sometimes though that moral compass is sorely lacking. So I'm very proud of what we're trying to accomplish here at Notre Dame.
EJ, but at the same time, the president is clearly not in line with Orthodox teaching. So how do you see the project yesterday with him standing above this commencement ceremony?
Well, first of all, there are lots of people, Catholic and non-Catholic, who are not in line with Orthodox teaching on a whole lot of things. And we're not going to ask President Obama if he believes in the virgin birth, for example. I don't think anybody would suggest that only people who believe in the virgin birth can show up at Catholic university campuses. Mm-hmm. And even on political questions, there is a wide variety of viewpoint within the Catholic Church on all kinds of political questions. My theory in this, I guess, proves I was raised Catholic, is the Catholic Church's job is to make everybody feel guilty about something, and that liberal Catholics tend to feel guilty if they're not pro-life enough, and conservative Catholics feel guilty or ought to if they're not pro-poor enough, and that the Church does some good work that way, I think. But the question I think raised by this whole episode is whether the pro-life movement is pursuing a strategy that really doesn't lead them anywhere. And I want to ask Helen the question that we know that if I think we know that if Roe v. Wade fell tomorrow morning, abortion would likely remain legal in all but a handful of states, and that the Right to Life movement hangs its whole movement on the idea of making abortion illegal. There are a lot of Americans who are pro-life who would like many, many fewer abortions, who are still uneasy about what it would mean for women if abortion were moved from the clinics into, to use the over, you know, perhaps inflated language, back alleys or illegal abortions of one kind or another, but who really want to preserve fetal life. And that the question that plagues me, sort of troubles me, is imagine two scenarios. Abortion becomes illegal, and you discover, if you could, that the actual abortion rate only drops 25% and is met by also a 25% increase in harm or death among women. Mm. Then imagine that abortion remains legal, but the government does a whole lot more of the work that many in the pro-life community now do to help poor women and help women in general bring their children in the world. And we reduce the number of abortions by 35%. Prudentially, which is the better path for people who think of themselves as pro-life to pursue? And that's, I think the dialogue opened up by Obama's visit, I hope, creates some debate within the pro-life community, because I really think their strategy right now leads to a dead end. And obviously, Helen disagrees with me, and I'd like to see what she makes of that.
Helen, what do you say?
Well, I'd actually like to try and do the impossible and respond both to Scott and to EJ. One, I'd like to say I agree with everything that came from Scott's lips on this with regard to the mission of a Catholic university. I actually, and maybe Scott, you'll say I'm naive, and I'm no longer at a Catholic university, but I actually don't think holding the two things together, the faith and reason, is as hard sometimes as some Catholic universities make it out, because we acknowledge all that is good from good reasoning. You know, we really embrace it. I mean, for goodness sake, Catholicism founded the university system in France, and we really embrace what we can find because we believe that God is not contradictory, that what we understand from the world, faith will illuminate, confirm, open up new vistas, tell us the direction to take it, but that we don't contradict reason. And I love that about the Catholic
Church. What about
Church?
E.J.'s very practical question?
A quick amen to all that, by the way.
I do too, actually.
Right. EJ's, you go to amen and go past it. With regard to EJ's question about really, you know, did the president open up dialogue and where to go from here? Again.
Well, and the pointed question about where the right to life community stands if, on balance, you ended up with, you know, better care for mothers and children.
Right. Well, there's a couple of, I have to say, there's a couple of flaws in the presumptions of his scenarios. One, that the abortion law is sort of the main thing happening in the pro-life movement now. I mean, I think we have more crisis pregnancy centers for women than there are abortion clinics now. And that actually probably takes up more money than anything the pro-life movement does.
No, and I credit you with that. I think that's a very good thing. And we could do more to help poor women who want to have their kids.
Two, the amount of government aid that has gone to poor women, that is a very complex question. On the one hand, women are most likely to say that they're having an abortion for two reasons. One, I'm not ready for a baby at this time, or two, I can't afford it. The question of what government aid could do is out there. There has been more aid precisely to women in these circumstances, but if you read some groundbreaking sociological stuff, I'm here with the book, in fact, you know, by Catherine Eden and Maria Kafalas, Promises I Can Keep. It's not the money all the time that's driving them either to keep the baby or to have the abortion. It's things in the culture. And I'm never willing to discount that the law is a part of that culture. And in fact, we know from the Centers for Disease Control statistics that the law was a factor in sending abortion rates sky high, you know, up to 1.6 million, maybe we're down to 1.3 million a year. We think two things have to go forward, and then I'll stop. One is that you can't it's like saying, I'm not going to try to work against torture. I'm going to try and get that soldiers not to want to torture. We have to do both. The law has to prohibit torture, and we have to have a culture in the military that won't do it. We have to do two things simultaneously. I mean, President Obama is the man who's the master of this right now, and we're trying both to say you can't a law cannot stand against human rights. We cannot say you can kill your own family member at their most vulnerable moment. We have to both work on the law, and as we've been doing, particularly in the Catholic Church with our fine work against, trying to end poverty, we have to give people the resources so that they can sustain life when it is given to them.
I agree that there are many different reasons why women have abortions, but the abortion rate is roughly four times higher among poor women than among middle-class or better-off women. That tells us something about how we might proceed if we want to reduce the number of abortions in the country.
Let me get a call from Rachel in Charlottesville, Virginia. Rachel, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm listening to everyone talk, and it's very compelling, a very compelling discussion. But what I'm dismayed about is that when I hear Helen's criticism of President Obama's, non-desire to have real dialogue, that he kind of used his speech as a way to sound good, but with no real intent for dialogue.
That's Helen's characterization. Yes?
I'm sorry?
That's Helen's characterization of the president.
Right. That dismays me because when I listen to her, I don't actually hear her real desire to dialogue. And so what I want to hear from somebody who is so rooted in, you know, such a profound passion for pro-life, I want to hear a real desire to dialogue on that side. I want to hear how she really, in a realistic and practical way, wants to dialogue and possibly, you know, bring people over to her side.
Helen, how about it? I mean, we have lived through a time on abortion, not least at all, of such rage in this country. You can listen to the president. You may disagree with him, but you may hear him saying, we've got to tone down the kind of inflammation here if we want to move forward in toto as a society. But on dialogue, you know, Rachel asked, do you really want it? Or do you kind of snort at that on abortion and say, get out. You're either doing it or you're not. You're killing or you're not.
Well, dialogue has got to lead somewhere. So, I mean, I think I'm being practical on that, that the dialogue, as I think the...
But Obama wants to go somewhere, doesn't he? I mean, maybe
well,
not on your...
Well, he says he wants to reduce a practice which he regards as a constitutional right, and I'll take him at his word for that, that he does. And there's a couple of things operating here. One, I can't dialogue about whether or not it's okay to kill a human life. In the same way, I don't dialogue about whether it's okay to kill civilians in a war or have a preemptive war.
But that's there may be irreconcilable differences here. Does that leave us locked in a kind of national rage that
no.
keeps us from moving on all kinds of fronts that you may
well,
care about?
You're moving between substance and tone in your question.
Well,
I'm
but
not willing
they're not
to
on
say
related.
That human rights can be violated. What I am willing to say is, hey, if the government wants to work with us to do things like what they're doing in Pennsylvania, which is provide government money to reach out to women, government money, not all this pro-life charitable funds, and say, we'd like to help you keep your child, and we want to give the message affirmatively that keeping the child would be good, that would be great. If the government wants to reach out and with assistance in the poorest communities for one of the main reasons they have abortion, which is that the child is out of wedlock, and help us solve this problem, I think that's great. I just want to be sure that people understand that one doesn't give away fundamental principles. He thinks the child can be left to die even after the child is born, and I don't think that that's good. He agreed to that in Chicago. I can't
that's
agree
not quite
to that.
True. That's not
well,
exact.
No, that,
no,
that actually
true.
Is true, and I have all the documentation with me on his actual language, on his votes on that. What I'm saying is I want a dialogue about reducing abortions. Absolutely. And the pro-life community is a great place for him to talk with because we've been doing it for so long.
EJ, speak to Rachel's question then on whether can that be a real dialogue if we still, you know, if irreconcilable differences leave us raging at one another. And is there a, is Obama right to describe, I think, a bigger context? It's not only about abortion, or is that brushing past a core moral issue, EJ?
Well, no, I think Obama, I was very glad he said, I don't want to fudge the core issue. Mm-hmm. And he could have skipped that whole sentence in the speech. I mean, I guess the question I always have in my head when we talk about this is abortion murder like other forms of murder? Do we believe that as a society? And as far as I could tell, nobody in the Right to Life movement supports life without parole for a doctor or a woman, you know, a doctor who performs abortion or a woman who has an abortion. Therefore, that is saying perhaps, even on the part of the Right to Life movement, that this is somehow different from outright murder. And it's in a way a question to Helen that it shows that there is this contradictory feeling that a lot of people, including some very principled Right to Lifers, have about what the nature of abortion is. But I think we've actually made progress on this issue. We weren't talking the same language, I think, about reducing the number of abortions 10 or 15 years ago. There's a much more widespread feeling about this. Some pro-life and pro-choice members of Congress have gotten together to introduce a variety of bills to try to reduce the number of abortions. I think that's progress. And I think that when you look at the polling, which is full of contradictions and splits, what my reading of it is that a majority of the country is pro-choice in the sense that a majority does not want to make abortion entirely illegal. But a lot of the people in that pro-choice majority have grave qualms about abortion. They're not comfortable with how many there are. Some of them even think abortion is murder and should be legal. That's the straight-out contradiction you have. Mm. And so if you want to move forward, you do need dialogue. And the dialogue, I think, has to focus on how do you help women have a respect for women and respect for life, help them, those women who really don't want to have abortions.
Let me get one last call from Detroit, just up the pike from South Bend. Martha, you're on the air, Martha. Our time is short.
Hi. I just want to say it's really great that the church is finally able to let someone talk about a really strong issue. To young people, let them get out of their bubble and talk about things that are happening in the real world.
Well, the church or Notre Dame, there's a slight difference, right, Martha?
Right, you're right. But I've gone to Catholic school my whole life,
yeah.
And I know that they have a pretty strong influence in the school. And
so you're glad for the open door at Notre Dame. Thank you, Martha. Scott Appleby, we've just got a minute left here. Where do you think Notre Dame goes post the Obama appearance? Does it change the direction of the conversation there in some way, or how they think about politics and this particular issue?
Well, there are various ways in which we hope to continue the dialogue with the Obama administration and hope to participate in events in the future that will try to advance the Catholic position. Can I say one other quick thing?
Yes, please.
I'm the son of a father who, when he was on one side of an argument, every once in a while would shift to the other position. Let me do that now. And make one point about why the bishops and other people might say, in principle, it's important to overturn Roe v. Wade. I don't happen to agree at this point, but I understand it, and it's this. And John Noonan, Judge Noonan, made a similar point at commencement yesterday. If abortion is murder, which Catholics believe it is, and if that is a legal matter, it's become constitutionalized, the Supreme Court has judged, then this is at the level of slavery, genocide, and other issues that cannot be held in principle as a right in the United States. So I understand the principled opposition to abortion on demand, even though I, and I think Notre Dame, prefer to tough it out in the complicated arena of politics.
Maybe not in principle, but maybe in dialogue, a kind of dialogue at Notre Dame yesterday. Scott Appleby at Notre Dame, E.J. Dionne at the Washington Post, and Helen Alvarez with George Mason University. Thanks to each of you for being here today. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.